Yes.
All right.
Perfect.
Here
ready.
We are. We're doing it. We're doing
lovely.
It.
Lovely.
We're doing
we
it
rolling?
Live.
Lovely.
You son of a bitch.
Hi, Chris.
You absolute piece of human trash.
Who, me?
Yes, you.
My name's Brad. And
I'm
welcome
Chris.
To, what are we doing?
Welcome to HPV.
Right.
We watch bullshit. Yeah.
Another sure fine do. Intro for the show.
We sure did, Brad.
And by the way, Chris, you're welcome.
You made me watch Hudson Hawk.
Fucking A.
Of all of the Bruce Willis movies available to us.
Available for free on YouTube.
Probably,
by,
yes.
As a matter of fact. Which
I mean,
was crazy.
We could have watched Striking Distance or something.
Oh, dude.
But instead, I mean, Brad, we watched Hudson Hawk.
Yes. One of the greatest personal failures of a vanity project that any Hollywood A-lister would have to bear. But
yep,
this was all him. And when I say all him, the core character, Hudson Hawk, was a character he had created. Do you know what the Hudson Hawk is?
No.
What that refers to?
I do not.
Well, essentially, there's a part of the city of New York, and I think it's around Jersey, wherever. I don't know this well. I heard this about 30 years ago when the movie came out. Bruce Willis was saying that there is actually a lane within the city where the wind comes in from the coast and it kind of gets filtered and it becomes really cold but also really strong. And because it comes in off the Hudson, that's
the river, yeah.
Yeah. Because it comes off that, it's called the Hudson Hawk. So, apparently it's a common slang thing for this event that happens in that area. And Bruce Willis, having grown up in that area, was like, that's a great name for a character. And ultimately, while he was doing his rockabilly, whatever the hell Bruno was.
Oh, man.
He had this other alter ego called Hudson Hawk, which he tried to make a three-picture movie franchise out of, and the rest of the world said, no, Bruce, no. No, this does not deserve another picture.
He tried to make a three-picture deal out of being a kooky cat burglar.
Yes.
In a story that he wrote.
Yeah. And not just a kooky cat burglar, he was particularly unique because all of his crimes were timed according to popular 50s songs or 60s sort of...
like show tunes.
Exactly so. So, you know...
And they show it quite a few times where he just repeats how long songs are in front of people and nobody mentions, like, hey, what the fuck are you talking about? Why did you just say 3 minutes, 56 yeah. seconds?
No one asked you how long the song was, Bruce. No one cares, right? But this is, again, one of the quirky things about Hudson that makes him so appealing to people all over the world. He's so charming.
And his kooky, fun-loving sidekick, Tommy, played ably by Danny Aiello.
God bless him. Yep. And now, okay, here's the thing. Danny Aiello, God bless him, you know, played a lot of tough guy roles. So for him to come in and be this sort of sidekick partner in all of these cat burglary capers and things like that, well, you know, it's kind of the comedic take on characters that he would normally play.
Right.
So bless him, he actually has the ability to do comedy. And so...
he makes
we got a solid performance from him. I guess that's what I'm trying to get to, is that for all of the horrible things that can be said about this story and the way it's told, there's a lot of technical aspects to this movie that because it had an A-list budget, I mean, this was like $90 million at the time it came out, which comparatively would be, what, $150, $160 million now? Something like that. So, you know, you're talking any one of these budgeted movies that bombed in the past, this past summer is, you know, it's at a minimum that budget. Yeah. So, anyway, you had talent, you had cast, crew, the effects were all practical effects, but the movie's just garbage.
It's such a jumbled mess, and the jokes are not funny. Like, there's a few that, like, slapstick humor.
There are a couple of jokes,
that are chuckleable.
Yeah, uh-huh. Chuckleable.
Yeah, something like that.
Excellent word.
Yeah, uh-huh. Sure, why not?
Patton. Fuck it.
We are talking about Hudson Hawk. I just lost brain cells watching this piece of shit. So well, there's a few moments where you can chuckle at it, but a lot of the, like, what they think are super cool jokes, and it's not just through the 2023 lens, because it bombed then, too.
Right,
but
exactly.
They're not even jokes.
Yeah, you know how there was, like, different categories of jokes, like dad jokes and things like that? These are just, like, one-liners and asides. So, you know, it's like, actually, it's a buck and a quarter staff, but I'm not telling him that, right? These little asides that make you go, oh, okay, that's kind of a funny little joke. Hudson Hawk is all, like... oh, man, he just will make a smirk at the camera, or, God, I'm trying to remember some of this stuff now, but it's just so horrible that it's, like, almost immediately forgotten after seeing it, you know? Anyway.
There are several times when I said at the TV, like, shut the fuck up, movie.
Oh, more importantly, there were at least three times where you said... what the fuck is going on?
That's one of
I don't understand what's happening. And within 30 seconds of you saying that, suddenly there's an exposition dump where these characters go, oh, by the way, we need to go to this castle because that's where we're going to find this. And then we can go on from there. And you're like...
Oh, thank you, movie.
Thank you, movie, for explaining your ridiculous fucking plot.
Because you've been very confusing up until now.
Yeah, this is one of the few times that I actually really wanted a movie to have that dialogue to explain what the fuck was happening.
Yeah, because there's the part, and it's set up so goddamn funny and obvious, too, because there's the part where Annie McDowell walks in and she's talking to the priest when she goes to confession.
Uh-huh.
And she spews out all this stuff, or she spews out a little bit, and the priest is like, and I don't have time for this, or, like, in English, please. And then she just lays out the entire plot of what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that was, like, exposition dump number three.
Something like that.
And there's
that,
probably, like, five in this movie.
Or more.
And you need them.
Yes.
Let me stress, you need them. Okay? Which, somewhere, I give them credit that, you know, somewhere in the production, the early drafts of the script or whatever, they figured out that this was such convoluted shit that you really did need to have these updates, these moments where... because Hudson Hawk says throughout the movie, what? Who's that?
Yeah.
What's going on? Where am I? What's happening? You know, and...
And the response is, I don't fucking know either, man.
Yeah. Most of the time, or it's like...
Wait, these dudes just know each other? Wait, did Brian Bosworth just offer to rape people?
Oh,
like,
my
what
God.
What the fuck is happening in this goddamn movie?
Brian Bosworth,
somebody
dude.
Needs to just say it. Oh, well, all right. Well, that's convenient. Because, it happens every 15 minutes. They give you an update.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Now, okay. All right. So, the story of Hudson Hawk. Let's see if we can make sense out of
this together.
Okay. It opens with Leonardo da Vinci.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I was gonna say with him getting out of prison, but no, there's about 10 minutes of da Vinci.
Yeah. So, right at the top of the movie, you've got this historical flashback, and da Vinci
with elements of magic.
Well... here's the funny thing, right? As I had said, The opening of the movie starts with this narrator, and I don't know who it is, but man, that narrator, he was probably glad to get paid for the work that he did, because yes. Holy crap. At any rate, one of the things that he illustrates for us, though, is that Leonardo da Vinci was studying alchemy, and one of the key aspects of the study of alchemy is turning lead into gold. However, in the movie, they say Da Vinci was trying to turn lead into copper, which was not true.
No.
So they already, and they said, but he actually figured out how to turn lead into gold as an accident.
Sure.
Why they had to go that route in the narrative, don't understand, but already the movie is fucked up history and doesn't know anything. So, okay, fine.
Again, it's a movie about a cat burglar that starts in the 1400s with Da Vinci doing magical alchemy to turn fucking lead into gold.
So they show that...
And blowing shit up.
Exactly. Exactly. Because he ends up... Okay. So they show that Da Vinci succeeds in creating the gold thing, but he has to use this special machine, and the machine has a bullshit crystal.
It runs on crystal.
That a crystal that you can break up into three pieces, just like, you know those mind teasers that they have for kids to, like, put the puzzle pieces together, you know, form this star. It's literally one of those fucking mind teaser kind of star puzzles, right?
Yeah.
And so Da Vinci breaks this up, puts it into three different objects, and then the whole machine blows up or something, I forget. Anyway. Yeah,
who gives a shit?
Yeah, who cares? Flash forward to Hudson Hawk is getting out of jail.
To Brillis!
By the way,
being the coolest fucking guy in the world.
Well, you know, what's funny is that at that time, right, we were coming out of tough guys who were big beefcake people. You know, Schwarzenegger, Stallone, they dominated, right? So you had Van Damme, you had Chuck Norris, who was a legit martial artist, but
he was kind of fading he didn't need to be the pack.
Well, yeah, and he didn't need to be big beefcake, right? So there was this period where Bruce Willis just kind of was able to slide in as not only an everyman comedy kind of an actor, but Die Hard made him the...
A legit action star.
A legit action star. So here's an action star who also happens to be a legit actor, not to say that Stallone isn't, but, you know, Bruce Willis came from a... different sort of approach to the career and ended up having this whole sort of niche that he was able to carve out for himself as this A-list celebrity. Oh, so
if you look through Bruce Willis's like filmography, it is shocking how many action movies he is not in. Most of his career is not action films.
Well, but yeah, that's but what that's he's because
best known for.
Well, see, here's the thing. He's known for those action movies. The other movies were primarily attempts to demonstrate that he was a dramatic actor. And while in some of them he definitely showed his range. Like, have you ever seen Death Becomes Her?
I was just going to say, yeah. Death Becomes Her, he is fucking fantastic in that movie.
Yeah, he's brilliant. And there's this other one where he was a Vietnam vet, relatively early in his career, low-budget indie sort of thing. And then subsequently, we've seen him take on these other more dramatic roles. But there have been a slew of roles he's taken on. Well, frankly, the movies were just garbage. I mean, the only reason he was taking them was either the paycheck or just to try and break up the action hero redundancy or both. You know, both those reasons. Anyway, so, story.
And does the last Boy Scout kick ass?
Dude, you know what?
Movie fucking rules.
I saw it twice in the theater. I fucking hated it. And, one of the main reasons why I hated it was I was really tired of seeing Bruce Willis playing the down and out.
Oh, he is
filthy.
He is gristled.
Yeah.
In that fucking movie.
Yeah, exactly.
That is about the grisliest that fucking Bruce Willis ever got. He is just a sleaze bag in that movie.
Exactly. And I really did not have any sympathy for him even as an anti-hero in the movie. I was like, with all of the horrible people that are being depicted in this movie, I mean, for me, The Last Boy Scout was an example of, here's a shitload of money, we're going to put these actors together, and we know we're at least going to make our money back, because this is what this is, you know? And, but I mean, like, that whole opening sequence with the football game, and the guy pulls out a gun. Fucking pistol.
Yeah.
I'm like, from the first opening scene, I'm like, get the fuck out of here. This is dumb as fuck.
Sure
right?
is.
So, anyway, wakes up with a dead squirrel on him. What the fuck, man? All right. So,
well, back
what
to
were
Hudson
we talking
Hawk.
About?
Hudson Hawk.
So, Bruce
He's
gets out
of
prison
being
yeah.
the coolest guy in the world, well, shuts his parole officer behind bars, and struts toward camera off screen. It's
he
fucking...
doesn't just close his parole officer behind bars. He steals the parole officer's keys.
And throws them in a mop bucket.
And throws them in a mop bucket. Now, you're telling me that's not going to be a violation of parole right there? And just, you're going to go right back into that fucking cell you just left. So, you know, we could say that there's some...
inconsistency.
Yeah.
yes.
But one thing about this movie that I will say to its credit is that it was never designed to take itself seriously.
No.
It is much more of like a comic book. Or I would say even like a superhero or a fantasy spy sort of parody kind of a movie. That was moreover the intention, clearly, with these different characters that they have and things like that. It's just that the humor itself is...
lacking.
So...
severely lacking.
They spent more time on the convoluted plot for this whole fucking thing than they did on actually working on the jokes and the comedic elements that would have made this a more successful comedy. And that, I think, was the core problem. Because Bruce was like, what? It's Hudson Hawk. He's a nice guy. He does jokes and all of this. You know what? He loves a cappuccino, but we're going to do a bit in the movie where he doesn't get a cappuccino till it's the very end and everybody's got a happy ending. You know?
Sure.
No one gives a shit, Bruce. It's a bullshit gag. Can you do anything with that other than, like, smugly smile before you sip your cappuccino? Is there anything you can do other than that? No. All of these jokes are like that. You know what? I'm going to say this. It'll be funny.
Debatable, but...
Yeah.
They needed to let somebody do a pass over this script.
Yeah.
But... again, we don't know how much was written,
yeah,
and how much Bruce Willis just said, "I'm not saying that. I'm gonna say this."
Yeah, because once again, it's Bruce Willis' vehicle through and through, all the way. I think because this bombed so heavily, that was basically the last Bruce Willis vanity project that was greenlit. Certainly at that level, you know.
So he goes to meet Tommy. We are introduced to Danny Aiello. They have a strange back and forth.
Yeah, we're about 6 minutes into the movie right now.
Yeah.
And
he's telling him that he needs to go do this job for these mobsters. He needs to steal, what is it, like a horse or something?
Right. Okay. So the parole officer that he criminally locked up in prison was saying to Hudson Hawk on the way out of the prison, hey, there's a job you need to do. Meaning...
all your shit will be forgiven if you just do this one job.
Yeah, and the job, of course, is robbery, which is what put him in jail for 10 years anyway. He was in jail for 10 years, somehow is still handsome, in perfect shape, perfectly quippy, not bitter.
But he's the world's finest cat burglar.
Still, yeah. Fastest hands, knows all the latest locks somehow. Fucking A. So, So the parole officer is saying, you got to do this job. He says no. He meets his friend Tommy. Tommy picks him up outside the jail and is like, you know what? You got to do this job.
We got to go talk to Frank Stallone.
Yeah, we got to go talk to Frank Stallone, who... Now, they do bits in this movie where it's like they're self-referential in ways that are really weird. Like, Bruce Willis says, what's Nintendo? At one point, just talking about how the world has changed. So they go to meet the two mafia guys, and they're called the Mario Brothers. Why?
And now, why is it Frank Stallone?
Well, I mean, hats off to Frank Stallone. Yeah. At least the guy's yeah, exactly. No matter what, you know, you can say that he probably legit got that role based off of just his own ability and the people that he knew, not just because he was fucking Sylvester Stallone's brother. You know what I mean? He was probably hanging out with Bruce, and Bruce was like, hey, I got a movie. I'm bringing all my friends in. Frank, why don't you come in and play this criminal guy? You know, and I don't know why I'm talking like that.
And this is about as far as I can tell you what happens in this story, because beyond here, it gets so fucking convoluted that I could not keep track of who characters were at all.
So the Mario Brothers basically impress upon Bruce that he needs to steal this horse from Leonardo da Vinci had made. They need to steal it from the auction before it actually gets sold. Tommy and him are able to pull it off in this very charming theft sequence where they sing a song to each other that they figured out what the time is. They sing the entire song. They even do chorus numbers and they sing together as a duet as they close out the song in the place where they're stealing the horse while security guards are running around, supposedly unable to find them or hear them or anything. As they are
singing at the top of their lungs.
At the top of their fucking lungs, dude. Okay, three guards running around.
That is how the two security guards find them. Because they are singing just in this art museum at the top of their lungs. And these two guys who had seen them on camera, or seen themselves on camera.
Yeah, they figure out part of the ruse. Yeah. See, we're skipping over a lot of stuff because it's pointless to even try and give this much detail.
It's drivel.
Yeah, so they pull it off and come to find out, oh, you know what, this horse... It has one of these fucking crystal pieces in it. Wow, oh my god, they destroy this ancient artifact to get this crystal out of it. Who knows? So they replace it at the auction, so it seems like nothing was stolen at all. Boy, that's weird. Bruce Willis meets Andy McDowell. Andy McDowell, who comes on to him that you're like...
We forgot to mention that they escape the art museum by just jumping through an awning... That's about 70 feet below them.
Oh,
and smash cut.
It's not 70 feet. It's more like 30 stories.
Yes.
They jump from the roof, and it's two guys, okay? One of them in their 50s.
Bruce Willis and Danny Aiello.
Yeah, Danny Aiello in his 50s at the time in the movie. They both bought... They essentially face plant on the top of this fucking...
Crashing through an awning.
Yeah.
Smash cut to Bruce Willis falling in the chair.
Yeah, which is the only way that they could say, you know what, skip all that stuff.
Yeah.
Just take it as wrote that they survived.
And then just note, we do not see Danny Aiello again for about an hour.
Yeah, that's true. Because, yeah, that's right. Because we're like, wait a minute, what happened?
Why is he back?
Where did Danny go?
Yeah.
I mean, presumably they escaped together, right?
No, apparently Danny Aiello sold him out for a job, we learned later.
Well, okay. So,
I blew it.
So they busted open, the crystal happens. Bruce met Andy McDowell at the auction right before they stole the horse. And so now she's like a clue. And Jesus Christ.
But he sees in the newspaper that he didn't really steal the horse. The horse is there. There's still going to be the auction today.
Why, that's strange. How unusual. Then...
I thought I stole that horse.
Then...
That's where he meets Annie McDowell, because he's sitting next to her at the auction.
Well, yeah. But now... So here's the thing, though. Auction happens, right? Right. So the auction happens, and that's where we meet the fucking candy bar people. We got Rapist Butterfinger by Brian Bosworth. I mean,
Snickers.
Yeah. Snickers. There's Almond Joy.
There's Kit Kat, who is David Caruso, who only speaks with little pre-printed cards that he has.
Yeah, but apparently he's a master of disguise because he wears the same dress and a wig like Andy McDowell later in the movie.
It's all real bad.
Yeah, so, but this candy bar crew is essentially like hired mercenary people who work for the CIA.
Yes.
And they're led by James Coburn.
Yeah.
And I mean, great to see James Coburn, but you're sitting there going, okay, wait a minute. Why is the CIA involved in...
Why is there a candy bar gang? Oh, they used to be like an STD-themed gang.
Yeah, that's right. And
Almond Joy used to be chlamydia.
Yeah.
That's a weird joke. Why is that in here?
Well, I would say, Chris, that it speaks to the foolish and absurdities available in a corporate... bureaucracy or a government bureaucracy, choosing names, trying to be, dude, it's horrible. Okay,
but don't they say at one point too that he's both CIA and not CIA at the same time?
Yes, and part of the reason for that is because James Coburn, we're talking about now here, James Coburn has essentially, that was his history. Was this whole CIA background, but now that they've latched on to the whole alchemy thing, he wants, of course, to get the machine for his own self so that then they can print their own gold and unlimited supplies and blah, 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 ba-do, ba-da. So he's basically going rogue, but he's still got all of his government elements that he's operating under.
Except for common sense, because he has a candy bar-themed gang, who, by the way, he hates. He doesn't like any of them.
It is fucking bizarre what happens in this movie. Because, okay, so Hudson Hawk gets kidnapped and wakes up in Italy. And
first he goes on a gurney ride.
Oh, yeah. Okay, all right. Now,
I don't remember why.
Okay, so what's happening here is... After the auction, he's schmoozing with Andy McDowell for a little bit, trying to pick her up. And it's, you know, it's weird. Why would this particular woman, but he's just so charming and handsome. He's Hudson Hawk. And during the course of that, that's, again, where the candy bar people are introduced. Candy bar people, Andy McDowell gets away. But they kidnap Bruce. They throw him in the back of the ambulance because they're going to take him whether he wants to go or not. And so he has this fight in the ambulance. And the gurney falls out the back of the ambulance and then goes down the Jersey Bridge at 60 miles an hour for about the next 3 minutes. While he's steering it.
And the colossal joke in this. He literally
says, how am I steering this?
Yeah.
No one knows. And also,
how's my driving? Call 1-800. I'm going to fucking die.
Hey, it's brilliant humor.
Great one, Bruce.
Well, I was going to say this earlier. I was going to say this earlier, though. And it's one of the things that makes this movie so weird is how it literally makes these comments that are clearly directed at the audience as being outside of the script and like... We know this is dumb. We're not going to think about it. Just don't think about it. You know, I mean, they are directly saying to the audience, yeah, we get this is fucking stupid.
There are several points where they just tell you who somebody introduces themselves.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm this person and I do this.
Yes. And now here is this thing for you to do. And that's my scene. Thank you. I mean, I wonder how many of Bruce's friends were actually cast in this fucking movie. You know what I mean?
Man.
Show up for a paycheck.
Let's just get to, I guess, the meat of this. Richard E. Grant.
Thank you. We're in Italy. Okay. Ambulance bit, all of that. Ultimately, Bruce gets kidnapped. He wakes up in fucking Italy. There are many scenes where Bruce gets knocked out and wakes up somewhere. Okay, it just sort of happens. So he wakes up in Italy with the CIA candy bar people. He's able to run and get away from them. But in the course of doing that, no, wait a minute. No, they wake him up, and that's when they introduce him to Richard Grant
and Sandra Bernhardt.
Sandra Bernhardt, right. Okay. Richard E. Grant
is swinging for the fucking fences in this movie.
Dude.
And good on him, because he was one of the only entertaining parts of this film to me.
He has this incredibly manic glee. And just as an actor as well, because I've seen him in many roles, and I know you have too.
Huh? He's Withnall.
Withnall.
Withnall and I. That weird-ass movie?
No, I don't think I've seen it.
Oh, you should go see Withnall and I.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. All right.
You might be mad at me, but you should go see Withnall and I.
Well, I guess what I'm getting to here is he has this ability to display this glee and this enthusiasm that, while it may appear manic and psychotic, it also appears completely authentic. So, with him and, like, Sandra Bernhardt deliberately, clearly, obviously, is just chewing up the scenery. I don't give a fuck. This is how I'm going to be.
Yeah,
right?
She's doing the real Sandra Bernhardt.
Yeah. I'm the best, baby, and you're going to like it or fuck off, right? Yeah. Whatever. Okay.
Sure.
Great.
Go for it.
So she's doing an extreme example of her own built persona.
Right.
Right? Richard E. Grant, while he's blending with her so well, is still very much the actor's actor, but delivering this joyfully psychotic bad guy.
It's very reminiscent of like a Tim Curry performance.
Yes.
He is like that levels of like swinging for the fences, just going for it.
Yeah, and doing it successfully.
Yeah, it lands.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, definitely agreed there. So Bruce gets introduced to these two, and these two are the ones who essentially share, oh no, we're doing this alchemy thing. Leonardo has these three crystals, and that's the only reason you're still alive, Hudson, is because you're going to get us these last two crystals. The next
one is... We need
you
to steal this codex.
Yes, the next one is in the codex, which is in the Vatican.
Yes.
So, come to find out,
guess who's at the Vatican?
Right, this lovely, sweet, kind, little, innocent woman who was falling prey to Hudson's deadly charisma. She, turns out, she's a nun. And that means she's a virgin and Hudson's going to get to get her.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just thought I'd point that out. But at any rate, so...
She does everything but throw herself at him immediately.
Yeah. And she's even at one point the father / mentor priest that she checks in with, her boss, even says to her, hey, can you ease up a little bit on the throwing yourself at Bruce?
And she's like, pump the brakes on, being so flirtatious. She's like, I just can't help it.
Yeah, she's
I'm pretty
like,
sure she almost verbatim says, like, I just can't help it. His charms. You're like, Jesus fucking Christ.
Well,
okay, movie.
I'll disagree with you in that moment because it's more along the lines of, this is the way that I'm going to be able to get close to him. Right? Something like that. But she then says something like, don't you think so? Something like that. So I'm throwing myself at Bruce Willis because I want him to be attracted to me.
I don't know, because she asked the talking Jesus in the subway thing underground what to do.
Oh, dude, the shit that's in this movie, man. She's got a crucifix that lights up. It flashes in accordance to, hello, I need you to talk to me right now. That cadence is flashing with the light, lighting up Jesus under the crucifix that is, I mean.
It's perfect.
It's so fucking bizarre, dude. So, okay, so now we've got the Vatican involved, and of course they know about the three crystals and all of this because they knew about Da Vinci. And so now we've got the CIA with the candy bar team.
James Coburn's candy bar team.
We've got Richard E. Grant and Sandra Bernhardt.
The Mayflowers.
Right, who, incidentally... Hudson wakes up in Italy and the Russo brothers or the Mario brothers are there. No idea why, but they just laugh and laugh and laugh at how they betrayed Hudson Hawk. And then they both get shot and killed and then they're done.
Uh-huh.
So
we forgot about the Mayflower's butler.
Oh, with his right,
cool,
right, right.
With his cool wrist swords.
Oh man. Man, I tell you, in the 90s, when I first saw this movie, I was like, those are so fucking cool, man. Could you imagine? Because he's
and
got...
And now 30 years later, you said almost those exact same words as soon as he came on screen.
I regret nothing.
No, right. They're super cool, dude.
Well, dude, the thing about them is practically when you look at them as a device, obviously they can't function in the manner we see them functioning in no. the movie. That being said...
They're sweet.
Yeah. The idea is that he's got... Instead of having, like, a derringer that's on a rail mount on the forearm that you flick out like they do in Taxi Driver, right? Or Wild Wild West. You remember that with Jeff Goldblum?
I just watched that about two... Jeff Goldblum? Isn't Wild Wild West?
Yeah. Isn't he the one with the derringer in the arm? Isn't that him?
I don't think so. I did fall asleep during it the other night. I don't know. We're not going to sit here and discuss the politics of Wild Wild West.
Yeah. Yeah. Those particulars don't matter at all. We're talking about another convoluted pile of garbage called Hudson Hawk. And so basically, here's the point. Stephen Fry, in his very early years, the character that he plays in Hudson Hawk is referred to as Jeeves. But that's kind of a fun little nod to the series called Jeeves and Wooster, where he and Hugh Laurie were a comedy duo, and Stephen Fry was Jeeves, the butler. So they have him essentially reprising this butler role in a way where he's a special agent, hitman, as well as a manservant, right?
Yeah.
So just a little note on the trivia and the genius that went into the construction of the characters and the script itself and the amount of planning that was put in making the presentation and zero planning in the actual story or the script or the comedy.
Because now we have three different factions, both with several different people within them, all yep. effectively fighting over Hudson Hawk.
Yeah. Yeah, and you pointed this out. This was an excellent observation. Hudson Hawk, with the exception of being the best cat burglar in the world with the fastest hands who can unlock any lock, even though he's been in jail for 10 years and has no idea what the new technology is, everybody comes to him.
Yeah, he's vital to all of this.
Yeah, he is.
When it's all of these rich and powerful people that could literally just take these things.
But, I mean, okay, he's a cat burglar with a specific type of skill set. Are you telling me there are no special forces, no mercenaries, there's no lockpick service that you could call to just try and figure out, hey, who's your best guy? Are you kidding me?
The best guy in the world steals the Codex out of the Vatican with a fishing pole.
That's right. He literally hooks it with a fishing pole
and reels it away.
Reels it out. I mean,
while those bars came down and presumably slammed that security guard into jelly.
Well, yeah, because they they showed that
it's an
that
outward
poor
ring.
Teddy bear.
It's an outward ring of like locking cell doors. There's yeah. not enough room for you to be in between any of them without just being crushed and mangled.
Well, and don't forget that there's a powerful, presumably sleeping gas that gets yes. emitted as well, so you're Bruce, either jailed or succumb to the gas.
Because Bruce Willis almost kills a room full of people with gas because he threw a teddy bear at the thing.
Yeah, he goes to test the system when he's scouting the location. And I know we're just rambling and none of this is making sense, but neither does the movie. Okay? You have to understand, everything that we're talking about makes sense. It does.
Because we had just watched it, because I guarantee you tomorrow I will never remember what happened in Hudson Hawk.
Look, I...
It is all that forgettable that it's... When there are standout moments, I'm trying to cling to them, because otherwise it's just rambling bullshit.
Dude, okay, I saw this twice in the movie theater, and then I never saw it until today. We're talking roughly, 25, 30 years, something like that. But I was thinking earlier, why did I see it twice? Because I went the first time because it's a Bruce Willis movie, Hudson Hawk, and I'm a fan of Bruce Willis. Okay, great. I think now that I was watching this, I went to see it the second time just to make sure I understood.
That it was weird and stupid, yeah, just like you had thought?
What did I witness? You know what I mean? What was this? So basically they're able to successfully steal the codec with a fishing pole. Yeah. Fuck, I forgot about how absurd that was. And Bruce
Willis gets kidnapped again.
And he gets kidnapped again. And when he wakes up, he's with Sandra Bernhardt and Richard E. Grant. And now here's the weird thing. Right around this point, those two, they start killing off other people.
Well, because...
And you're like, wait a minute, aren't you working with them?
He has the codex, and Annie McDowell gives him that cappuccino that knocks him out. And he wakes up, and there are just henchmen there. Like, she has Vatican henchmen that know other henchmen. Like, yeah. She knows the Mayflower twins or whatever
that. And she knows the candy bar twins.
Yeah, and it's like, what the fuck is happening?
The candy bar team. So you're like, what? Yeah. Andy McDowell is locked into everybody, knows everybody's background, and is doing all of these maneuvers. Somehow nobody's, isolated her and killed her.
No.
Which you would think that Richard E. Grant would do,
Yeah, and then he gets... gets kidnapped again. He gets forced to steal the flying machine.
Yeah, well, okay.
That has the...
So there's a bit of back and forth with that, because essentially what happens is they steal the second crystal, and then Bruce gets a conscience and is like, no, I'm not doing this for you anymore.
Oh, that's
no,
right.
It's not going to happen, right? And then they say, well, if you don't do it, then Danny Aiello is going to die. And then everybody else you like is going to die. And then everything you do is going to die. Right? This kind of stuff.
I will kill everyone you have ever met. I'll kill the bitch you went to prom with. To which he responds, oh, I forget the lady's name. I can give you an address on that one.
Well,
what the fuck did you just say?
Honestly, I'm okay with that joke because it a lot of the whole humor plays into what's supposed to be the opposite. You know what I mean? So this guy's saying, I'll kill the bitch you went to prom with. No, you wouldn't want to hurt that chaste, lovely, angel from high school. He's like, oh, yeah, she was a bitch. You can kill her. I'll tell you how to get to her, So in that way, it kind of plays into it. But then you've got jokes like Brian Bosworth saying, oh, do you want me to rape him? And it's like, what?
Both of them?
Both of them, yeah. The male and the female. Brian apparently is perfectly willing to do both. Now, I know professional football is a savage sport, but poor Brian Bosworth, this is not the best way to represent your transition to a movie career by playing this Butterfinger guy who's dumb as a fucking stump, right? And gets bested by Bruce Willis at every fucking turn.
Yep.
So, anyway, so the jokes are real hit and miss, I guess you could say. So at this point, Bruce gets a conscience, and then he decides, okay, fine, I'll go ahead and I'll steal your crystal. And then Richard Grant and Sandra Bernhardt are like, no, we don't need you anymore. And then suddenly, do need you.
Oh, well, didn't they, David Caruso and his gang steal the last one? They do it off screen. Because they didn't feel like writing another caper, so they just had David Caruso being the master of disguise.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Right? Because then they just have this thing that they...
That's right. There's a press clipping. There's a newspaper press clipping that they show saying, oh, well, this was stolen. This is horrible. And they make some joke like it was a bit louder than what you would have done, but it still got the job done.
Yeah, people still think that you killed that guard.
Yeah, exactly. So they blame a murder on Hudson Hawk there. And then So now they've got all three parts of the crystal, and Richard Grant, Sandra Bernhardt start wasting all of the candy bar people, right? Somehow James Coburn is nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. But the other agents...
He's getting his combat pajamas on.
Yeah! What the fuck are these uniforms? I mean, I don't get it, right? Oh, and then there's a bit where...
It's the funniest goddamn part of the movie.
Oh, dude. Man, they, at one point, Bruce Willis...
Brian Bosworth in combat pajamas.
With a purple cravat.
And everything.
Yeah, uh-huh. And he matches James Coburn. Uh-huh. I mean, they just... There's no tactical, practical, there's nothing. It's like...
No, it's unprompted by anything.
It's literally like going to a Hollywood nightclub. Saying, you know what? It's going to be military fashion night tonight. We're going to get matching camouflage. We'll have purple cravats. Were they wearing berets? I think they were wearing berets.
They were wearing berets.
We'll have matching berets. Yes. I mean, but no guns, no badges, no insignias, nothing. We're just going to look military. We're not going to be military. Aren't you working for the CIA?
It looks like we're wearing fancy pillows.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Uh-huh.
And why the uniforms anyway? Because if you're CIA, then you're civilian. You know, you're coming in. I mean, okay, you're not civilian. You're a government worker. But you're coming in basic clothing. You're not coming in tactical gear unless you're actually doing something tactical.
But then they need to go re-kidnap Annie McDowell because she's the only one who knows how to put the crystals together. But it turns
out...
Well,
they think that she does. Yeah.
But it turns out in the end that Hudson Hawk knew how to put the crystals together.
Oh, well, dude, okay, so they give Andy McDowell and Hudson Hawk this same drug to kidnap them, okay? Because there's a lot of fucking kidnapping in this movie.
Oh,
and
you mean where they paralyze them from the neck down and then they do the gags?
That's what it is. They paralyze them from the neck down with this bullshit thing.
With a blow dart.
Well, and then when they escape, Andy McDowell, there's this whole thing where there's a semi truck and it closes up and it's got the Vatican symbol on the back of it. Uh-huh. And later they're like, oh yeah, we traced that truck from the license plate. It's like, you couldn't figure out from the big symbol on the back that says Vatican that's what that fucking truck, that's where that came from.
No.
The biggest clue we all saw... And somehow you spotted a license plate and tracked it down. Get the fuck out of here.
It's ridiculous.
Oh, it's beautiful. So, Jesus. All right, so Andy McDowell, so they do this whole bit. Everybody gets kidnapped. They get poisoned and paralyzed from the neck down. So there are these bits where everybody's wagging their heads. Bruce Willis tries to kiss Andy McDowell, and she tries to kiss Bruce Willis, but they can't because they're paralyzed from the neck down.
So instead they just make weird mouth
sounds
at each
other?
They
make fish faces at each other. Mah. You're just like, this is embarrassing.
This is really bad.
So, okay, now, all right, so they've got all three crystals, and they're too stupid to figure out how to put together this elementary school puzzle.
They know how the rest of the machine works, though, apparently.
Oh, yeah, because, and I mean, the machine has all of these flaps, these spinning wheels, these sections where it's like, there should probably be a manual or something, because...
And for a machine that Da Vinci built, a lot of computers.
Yeah.
A fuck ton of computers.
Well, you know, it's the blend of the old and the new technology, and...
Because it's cool.
Yeah. So Hudson gets all three of these pieces, and he assembles this thing, and then gives it to them. They put it together, and then they get this whole machine going. Because
starts turning and churning.
Yeah, exactly. And the light hits it, and this whole first part of the chemical process that we saw at the very beginning of the movie, we see it replicating itself here, and then Bruce turns to Andy McDowell and says, hey, you know... What would happen if, say, I kept one of the pieces of the crystal.
If you put one of the, if you put the crystal together wrong and put it in there.
Oh, that's right. What would happen if you put the,
And but what would happen if you kept one of the pieces and bad, it would be very bad. Good. It's said in the coolest way possible. It's so goddamn stupid.
Well, and here's the other thing. They show the piece of the crystal that he supposedly palmed and nobody saw. And I mean, it's this big chunk with like this little nail on one side of it. And immediately I'm like, you're telling me that Sandra Bernhard, at the least, who makes a point of saying she's watching him throughout the entire fucking movie. There's even a sequence where she kisses him, slaps him, letting him know, I'm watching you. You're
watch
bad.
It, watch it, Buster.
Yeah, exactly. Don't fuck with me because I'm watching you. Somehow she doesn't notice the bait and switch. Okay, fine. The machine goes kaflooey. Things start flying all over the place.
In scenes of incredible violence.
Sandra Bernhard gets splashed with lead.
And is a bloody skeleton.
Exactly. They make a muck monster out of her, and then they turn what's left into a lead statue. So we see her like two or three times in this post-meltdown state, right? Richard Grant,
he gets caught in the gears.
Right.
He gets tangled in the wires and gets
and
pulled
into the
gears.
And then he gets splashed.
Uh-huh.
So we see him a bloody mess at the end.
Well, the first thing we see is when the machine is going wrong, I think it just kills a tech and we just see viscera.
Yeah. I mean, shit starts blowing up, right? Like, literally. And people are like the handlers around the computers and stuff are like, oh, shit! And things start, you know, literally exploding. Hot molten lead is splashing around and all of this.
And some of these computer techs are still trying to fight Bruce Willis, so he's punching them out while this shit's going absolutely wonky.
Yeah, and, So, actually, come to think of it, we did do a body count just on that one sequence. Bruce is responsible for killing Richard E. Grant, Sandra Bernhard, and...
He decapitates the butler.
Decapitates the fucking butler. That's right. So that's five people down just in that one climactic sequence. He even makes a joke about how he killed Richard E. Grant and Sandra Bernhard.
Yeah, because right? Now he doesn't need to belong to the Hat Club.
Why?
Why? It's the perfect joke, Brad. Yeah, see, it sucks when somebody tries to defend Hudson Hawk, doesn't it?
Yeah, he decapitates the butler and says, well, that he won't need a Hat Club of the Month membership. Oh, Jesus, yeah. It's so fucking terrible. So, yeah, so everybody dies, and then he's making out with Andy McDowell.
Yep, and then James Coburn steals her somehow. I don't remember how. It doesn't matter. But he and Danny Aiello, again, Danny Aiello straight up tells us, okay, we have to go to this castle to save her.
Right.
Another instance of them just straight up telling us because we have no idea what's happening.
And that, I'm glad you said that because that was another very specific example where you said, what the fuck is happening now? Danny Aiello says that, and I say, oh.
Thank you, movie.
See, the movie just told us, again, here's what we need to do. We need to go to the castle because we need to find her. And you went, all right, thank you. And it was just like, you know, thank God.
You know
God.
What? At this point, I don't need to know why he's at the castle. I don't know why. Need to know why any of this. I just need to know what you're doing.
Yeah, give me some sort of a through line. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Give me some sort of a through line. And the movie, God bless whoever was writing. I will say that as the positive towards the script. They knew it was so convoluted that they had like at least 4 points where some character does an exposition dump that's like, okay, this is what's happening next. And thank God because, you know, at least you had some semblance of being able to follow along. Now I'm thinking in my mind the fucking latest Daniel Craig's James Bond movies. I mean, if you try and watch the last two or three of those, it's like, what the fuck is happening in these movies?
I am so lost.
Yeah, and they don't have those kind of beats built into the script where you can say, oh, okay, this is why we're here, you know?
And like, no, he's just like on a different island somewhere and just like, well, why the fuck are we in this place and who are these people? I don't know. It's James Bond, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. And so anyway... With Hudson Hawk, so they go to rescue Andy McDowell, and fuck it. They save her, and it's a happy ending, and they're trapped in a car, right? And the car goes over a cliff, and we all think Danny Aiello's dead, and everybody's sad, but then he comes back at the end of the movie, and true to form, the script, they're like, how did you survive? And he says, I don't know, airbags. And they're like, airbags? And he says something else like, yeah, and then there was this air pocket, and I was able to get out.
Oh, right? I don't think they go into that kind of depth. I think you're doing a little bit of explaining for the movie, because as I recall, they say, well, how did you...
He says airbags.
Yeah, he says airbags. Don't you believe me? And Bruce Willis says, yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah, I suppose that's what happened. Yeah, he says something else airbags.
I suppose that's what happened. Sure. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Once again, the movie is like, we know this is garbage. But you know what? Don't think about it.
Fuck it.
Yeah, fuck it. Who cares? The last bit of the movie, they're telling us, don't worry about it. You know?
Again, I just love... Because they over-explain some things, and then Danny Aiello's just back, and you sold me out for a job, and we were both like, what are you talking about? We have no idea what...
Yeah.
What the fuck? He sold you out for what job?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought this whole thing would be this whole CIA, Italian mafia, billionaire, whatever gig would be an easy job. But I didn't know it would ever come down to this. I didn't know that they would be using me to use you. And you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah, we haven't seen you for an hour. We don't know what you're talking about, man.
Yeah, this is supposed to be one of those, you know, like...
friend...
Third act, low point sort
betrayal.
Of things. Yeah, where Danny Aiello's saying, oh, I'm sorry. And by the way, the job he's talking about is this Da Vinci job, of course. But... The thing that gets me about it is he said, I didn't know that they were going to use me to get to you. It's like, motherfucker, your first four sentences were how you deliberately put yourself in the position to be used because you thought it would be a good idea for Hudson. What the fuck are you talking about?
And also, yeah, we have no context because the last time we saw you were just stealing that horse and then you disappeared from the movie.
Yeah, and then you fell onto, what is that called? An awning.
Yes.
Both of you fell onto this massive awning. You disappeared. Presumably you're dead, but presumably you survived. Then you show up in Italy. And you're running around in the background, so we know you're there, but then you show up at the moment that Bruce needs to be convinced to continue with the job, and you're apologizing to him in a way that just makes no sense, like the rest of this fucking movie.
Uh-huh.
Why?
One of my favorite things about this movie, too, and we kind of touched on it, is everybody is so enamored with Hudson Hawk.
Why? Yeah.
Everybody either needs him or wants to talk about him or wants to be around him. Mm-hmm. But they're always constantly telling him how disposable he is as well.
Yeah.
But everybody's just drawn to him and he's so necessary for all of these things.
Well, okay. Now, here's the other thing. That take what you're saying and let's go just a little bit deeper with that. Hudson, knowing all of this about these other people... never changes in the way that he reacts to other people or even the information. There will be little comedy bits or maybe he's mugging or he'll say a one-liner or something like that. But with Hudson, we never really have a moment that makes you understand what these different power dynamics mean to him. Like, He's just going after Andy McDowell because she's a pretty face. Mm-hmm. He finds out she's with the Vatican. Makes no fucking difference to him whatsoever.
No, and typically in this kind of film, you would have him being the super smart criminal somehow using each faction against each other.
Anticipating because he knows these factions. He's aware. Apparently him and James Coburn go back.
Yeah, because James Coburn's over a number of years in prison.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, okay, if you guys...
In a story that we're never told.
That we're never told, but... Okay, so if you've got this history with James Coburn, why are you talking to him in the same way that you're talking to Richard E. Grant or Sandra Bernhardt, who apparently you've never met before, and they are clearly fucking weird? You see what I mean? It's like Hudson Hawk is so one note in this world of crazies that you don't even have an opportunity with him. Like, you can't even say that he's the straight man in this reacting to... the world of crazies, because he's trying to make those jokes and he's trying to be just as strange as the rest of them. But none of these characters, aside from their outward outlandish performances or very, very one-note presentations of who their characters are, we don't really get very much depth at all in terms of who the characters are. The comedy suffers because of it. You know, the whole story is just basically focused on having an international spy caper that ultimately makes no fucking sense. So, okay. All right, well, and that's 90 million gone.
And their use of sound effects and what they thought, how they thought that would enhance the comedy does not.
Oh, well,
it
yeah.
does the exact opposite. It makes it bad.
Well, it points out that they're really fucking trying to work with material that is so weak. Like, there's the one slapstick bit where Bruce is getting away from two of the security guards. And the first guard, he hits the guard twice in kind of a comedic gesture. But instead of using, like, your standard stage combat sounds of punching or things like that, they use the sounds of a frying pan. So he hits a security guard. It's like, plang, plang, right? And then the other guard, he kind of pushes out of the way. But your brain is suddenly processing, wait a minute. What did I hear? Why, you know, why is that kind of a Warner Brothers cartoonish soundtrack being applied here
when James Coburn is like kicking him back and forth and he keeps doing it to the sound of like those springy door stops, the
yeah.
boing, oing, 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 oing,
yeah.
oing.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
What are you doing?
Yeah, because in all of these other areas where you're showing the violence or you're doing the violence, you're pretty straightforward with what that violence is. The guns going off and all of that, and then suddenly when you decide this might be funny, suddenly here's a little, you know, screwball sound effect or something like, I mean, it's once again,
it's awful.
Yeah. And it's just not, there was too much flash and not enough actual substance in the movie for it to be able to hold any sort of franchise status. So obviously the movie bombed. And then, basically, that, I would say, was probably one of the first sort of warning signs that we had that Bruce Willis's A-list status may not be, was waning. That's a good way to put it, yeah.
All right, Brad, I got a piece. Let's wrap this up. What do you got going on?
well, I'm plotting and planning for 2024. I'm in a kind of unique situation with the strikes. The strikes are still currently going on, so on one hand, I found myself with a lot of free time, but on the other hand, there's still a lot of shit to do. So don't want to declare anything right now, but things are kind of working. You got anything? What do you got?
I got a piece. Nope.
All right. God bless you.
It's all here. You're listening to it.
All right. All thanks right. for tuning in. Thanks, everybody. Right. Thank you, Chris.
Bye.
Bye.